Thanks for the memory of sentimental verse. Nothing in my purse, and chuckles when the preacher said, for better or for worse.
How lovely it was.
Well, the name of the book is called Dear Bob, Bob Hope's Wartime Correspondence with the GIs of World War II. The co-author, Martha Bolton, is here. The book was also written with Linda Hope. It's really not only written by you guys, but, you know, Martha, what you did is you took these real letters, and you'll tell me how the heck you found all these letters. Real letters, written letters. Today, people don't even know what that is anymore, I suppose. And and printed those and then found Bob Hope's personal responses to those. But let me back up a bit. You knew Bob Hope because of how?
I was a staff writer for Bob for 15 years. I was his first woman staff writer. And I was with him in the 80s and the 90s. And these letters had always been at his house since World War II. And Linda grew up with the letters, so they always were, you know, a curiosity to her. And she even did a high school paper on them. And then when I discovered them, we were working on a project, and I had to read some of them. And I was so impressed with the relationship that comes through these letters. You really understand why the military was so close to Bob and why Bob was so close to the military. When you read these letters, they're just amazing. And I talked with Bob when he was alive, and we talked about the letters, and I told him that I thought they'd make a great book. And he agreed. He was a, you know, they were so close to his heart, he didn't think he could get through them, you know, without choking up and and it being a, you know, such a moving experience. But he suggested I talk with Linda, and so Linda and I started working on it and had meetings and, you know, started going through the letters back then and got pretty far along on it. And then different other projects came up, and it would get, you know, it was always there in our minds and our hearts, but, you know, it had to be moved aside. And then, unfortunately, Bob passed away, and so I wasn't sure where things stood. But a few years ago, I got an email from Linda asking if I would was interested in getting back on the project, and we finished it up. So By this time, I had moved to Tennessee from L.A., and the letters had left his house, and they had been donated to the Library of Congress. So I started going up there and finishing up the research, continued writing the manuscript, and then would send it off to Linda, and she'd make great suggestions and send them back, and we passed it back and forth and trying to decide which letters to put in. So we'd cut it down, and then we'd, you know, add to it as we found more that needed to be in. And so this was a process, and it was then the University Press of Mississippi came on board, and we were hoping it would come out last year with all the anniversaries, but then a lot of them got canceled because of COVID.
Well,
so it came out.
It's out right now, that's for sure. I have it in my hand, so I know it. And I've read the book, so I'm going to paraphrase. I had the opportunity to interview Bob Hope one time, and I will paraphrase what he told me when I asked him why perform. Not only I think every war that he was alive, he performed for the troops. Why was it? And he said, well, when I first went out there, and again, this is the part I'm paraphrasing. When I first went out there, the first few times I did it, I realized as I got laughs, really big laughs, that I had this audience there that understood me, I understood them, and we connected, and I'll never get laughs like I get when I travel and perform for our soldiers. Again, I'm paraphrasing, but is that about right?
It is, and that was his first impression, because he went out and you know, it was like, where has this audience been? They just clicked, they hit it off, and it was a great experience, as any comic would with that kind of an audience and that, you know, that kind of response. But it deepened, and as you read these letters throughout World War II, you can see it. It became so much more than an audience. They became his sons and daughters. He was their buddy, their pal, their best friend. He was family. And that just comes across, and you see it. That answers the why. You know, we would see him talk, you know, interact with veterans when they would come to the show in different places. And you knew that there was this bond there. But until you read these letters, you don't understand how deep that bond goes. And
right. let's give some examples of what you're talking about. Now, some of these letters. Now, imagine you are performing, and you go from place to place to place. In fact, you in the book are sprinkled some very funny Bob Hope lines. And at one point, he's essentially saying, "I don't know where I am." You know, and he probably really didn't know, you know.
I
mean, when you travel that much, how could you? And so he's going, and in all, thousands and thousands of people. So can you imagine today a performer getting letters, handwritten letters, and answering handwritten letters with your own handwritten letter? I can't imagine how many of these he got. Some of them are so, I mean, some of these soldiers were injured. Some of these soldiers were, I'm terrified. And they said so in these letters, and he empathized with all of that. Can you give me an example of just one letter that touched you? There are so many examples in the book.
There are. This is one from, you mentioned him going into the hospitals. This is one from one of the soldiers. "I am not griping or complaining. Rather, I am explaining when I tell you that on the morning of the day that I saw you, I had been told that I could take my choice of two things, keeping what legs I had left with the probability of never walking again, or having them amputated with the possibility of walking with artificial limbs. I'll not lie, I was plenty scared, down in the dumps, a young kid with what appeared to be a pretty dismal future. Understand you, I was not feeling sorry for myself, but I'd definitely be lying if I told you that I wasn't giving it plenty of thought. Mr. Hope, you'll probably never remember this, but as you walked down the ward saying a few words to first one man and then another, you gave each man a new chance to regain himself by the cardinal dosage, i.e., laughter cures all ills. The thing I refer to you as not remembering is what you said when you looked at me. With your permission, I will quote your exact words as you walked up beside my sack, glancing at my legs before you spoke. I bet you're glad you didn't have to come down and hear us today. Didn't have to? I couldn't have moved 6 inches if my life depended on it. Allow me to tell you, sir, that could you possibly recall I made no answer to the statement in quotes above, but that I broke into almost hysterical laughter. Imagine had you said what I expected to hear, that old soap about how are you, old man, and is there anything we can do? I'd have probably been cussing yet. That, sir, is why I'm writing this letter. I know of no other man whom I have ever encountered who could have so well lifted a lower man's spirits than you did that day. To go further, when I commenced to laugh, you said, and again I quote, that's a better laugh than I got during the entire 3-hour show, and I haven't said anything yet. You stayed within range of my hearing about 20 minutes that day, and if I live to be a million, I will always treasure it as the outstanding day of my life."
Hmm. That's so beautiful. And Mr. Hope answered many of those, and what you do throughout the book, Dear Bob, Bob Hope's wartime correspondence with the GIs of World War II, you oftentimes, not only do you have the letter, but you have Bob Hope's answers, personal answers to those letters.
Right. At the height of the war, he was receiving 38,000 letters a week.
How did he answer?
He did his best to answer as many as he could. Obviously, I don't think it's humanly possible, but if it is humanly possible, Bob Hope would have done it. He just when he whenever he had a spare moment, he went through his GI mail. He had a great secretary, Marjorie Hughes, and thankfully she saved all these letters and also saved his responses that she made on the old carbon paper and the onion skin paper, and it's just a treasure trove of memories, and just shows this beautiful relationship that was forged during those years when there was such uncertainty, and each one seeing each other, you never knew if you're going to see them again.
Well, it's been said that if Bob Hope had to live his life all over again, he wouldn't have time to do it. He was an amazing man indeed. More memories. And, you know, I'm also curious what it was like to be a comedy writer and a woman at the time you were writing, Martha. We'll be back after these on WGN.
I'm sailing away, set an open course for the virgin sea.
That's the real deal, huh? That's for you, Virginia. 10 minutes before 3 o'clock on WGN. After 3 o'clock, it is Karen Conti. She'll be talking about all sorts of legal things. And yes, we do have our lawyer joke of the week coming up. Yeah, I know. Be careful how I say it. I don't want Karen to follow me down a hallway. You know, we're talking to Martha Bolton, who co-authored with Linda Hope, Bob Hope's daughter, a book called Dear Bob, Bob Hope's Wartime Correspondence with the GIs of World War II. In the book, it says, Bob Hope once said to the audience, a lot of these sailors sleep in hammocks. You know what a hammock is, don't you? That's government-issued curvature of the spine. Something like that might have gotten big laughs back in the day. Right, Martha?
Oh, absolutely. The soldiers loved it whenever he talked about the things that they were enduring out on the field. So that was definitely part of the assignments for the writers at that time.
Well, they also loved Jane Mansfield. They also loved Barbara Eden. They also loved Joey Heatherton. I mean, the list of the women that, in particular, that he traveled with, they loved it because it was relief for them, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And they were, everyone that he brought reminded them of home. And they just, you know, whatever they delivered, a song or a routine with Bob, it just was all about home and telling them what was going on back at home. And, you know, that's what they're missing. So hurry up and get this over with and get back home. And, he just represented home and hope and just everything. He was such an encourager to all of them. And not only with the ones that could see the show, because sometimes not everybody got a ticket to go see it. They tried to accommodate it as much as possible, but sometimes they'd miss it. So you'd have those letters of GIs writing that they didn't get to see a show, but they heard about it, and so the word would just spread. They would share the jokes that he told, and there's a picture in the book that I just love that one of the superiors took it of the GIs, the curfew had hit, and they were supposed to be in bed, and all the radios were off, but they were hiding under their blankets listening to the radio, listening to Bob's show. It just was such a part of their survival. And when he would write a letter, if a letter, came into the camp, even if it was just to one soldier, it got passed around everybody and everybody benefited from it. And in fact, a lot of the letters, they're written by 5, 6, 7, 8 guys together, and they'll all sign it. And there's this one paper bag that they all put their thumbprints on it and mailed it to him. They wrote on whatever they had. They wrote on the V-mail stationery, or they wrote on a coconut. They wrote on toilet tissue. Huh. Yeah,
what's amazing to me is how you can keep toilet tissue all those years and it would hold up. Or, you know, but the fact that he even wanted to keep this stuff is incredible. You know, you wrote comedy back at a time when women just didn't do that. And it was considered to be too rough and tumble in the comedy room. What was it like? You were there. You're a pioneer in a sense.
Well, I was with him in the 80s and 90s was when I came on. And, you know, I didn't even realize I was his first woman staff writer. I just came on and started writing jokes. I had been writing for Phyllis Diller and Joan Rivers. And, you know, I was been working in comedy. But I was with all of these guys, and they were really helpful to me because I tended to keep myself back. I'm shy by nature, and they would just they kept pushing me into different situations. If we had to go up and talk to the star, or if we had to go into Bob's dressing room for a line change, you know, they would just say, "Come on, Martha, let's go," you know, and just showed me the ropes. And it wasn't competitive, and I didn't feel any lesser than or anything like that. We all went to lunch together. We went to dinner together, and you know, and during the breaks mm-hmm. at the show tapings, and we'd all talk on the phone together. Sharing our jokes back and forth, and you know, these are the ones I wrote. These are the ones they wrote, and we'd laugh, and it was a great group to work with. We just.
Wow. That's good to hear. Yeah. The name of the book again is Dear Bob, Bob Hope's Wartime Correspondence with the GIs of World War II, wherever books are sold. Martha Bolton, thank you so much for joining us on WGN.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.